WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Neil Armstrong muffed his line a bit when he hopped onto the moon 20 years ago. "That's one small step for man," he said, "one giant leap for mankind." What he meant to say, of course, was, "That's one small step for a man," which is how it appeared in the newspapers. It was indeed a giant occasion, but 20 years later, we can see it was giant in different ways than NASA expected. From the beginning, the Apollo program was operating on two agendas, one public, one hidden. The hidden agenda was pure Cold War. President Kennedy's answer to Russia's Sputnik was a race to the moon. It was perfect. It employed the Cold War technology of huge rockets. It was a clear and dramatic goal, and Kennedy thought the U.S. could win it. We would out-missile and out-muscle the Soviets, and nobody would be killed, and the whole world would notice. Kennedy went to his science advisor, Jerome Wiesner, for help on the project. Wiesner told him, "I'll make you a deal. I'll help you get Americans to the moon if you'll agree not to call it science." Both men lived up to their bargain. Kennedy emphasized the adventure and quest of it all. He said that humanity had an obligation to explore new frontiers, and America should lead the way. But understandably enough, NASA soon was coming up with all sorts of scientific and technological rationales for the program. "If we can get some moon rocks to analyze," they said, "we can discover important clues about the origin of the solar system and the cosmos." A couple of years into the moon race, I appointed myself to a bit part in the drama. In early 1966, when I was 28 and easily obsessed, I printed a button that read, "Why haven't we seen a photograph of the whole Earth yet?" I sent the button to the appropriate people in NASA, the Senate and the House, and the various Soviet science academies. Both nations had been in space for nearly 10 years at that point, and there still was no color photo of the Earth as a whole planet. NASA sent an investigator to see if I was a threat to the U.S. government. His report, I later learned, opined that I was not a threat, and it ended, "P.S., why haven't we seen a photograph of the whole Earth yet?" Finally, in 1968, before the Apollo 11 landing, astronauts orbiting the moon took color photographs of the home planet, and they were electrifying. So was the landing next year. Kennedy had been right. Landing a man on the moon was seen as a major benchmark of human history, and thanks to television, people felt as if they had participated personally. But Wiesner had been right about the amount of science that would come out of it. The moon rocks turned out to be pretty pedestrian in composition, worth more for their voodoo value as museum displays than as clues to the origin of anything. The Earth photos, meanwhile, took on a mythic dimension. The image of the living, blue, jewel-like Earth rapidly became the icon of the age. Some say the ecology movement began as a direct result. The first Earth Day was in 1970, and the moonshot was a famous Cold War victory for the West. But it soon showed signs of having been an overspecified goal. The race to the moon was over. We won. Everything after the moon seemed like a series of anticlimaxes, even though far better science came out of the relatively cheap robot probes to Mars, Jupiter, Venus, and so on. NASA went into a decline from which it still hasn't recovered 20 years later. Even the photos of Earth dried up. The images you see over and over these days are all from the Apollo program 2 decades ago. Maybe it's time to print up another button which says, "Why haven't we seen any new photos of the whole Earth lately?"